So welcome, Jesse Radolinsky. Rad.
Yeah.
Let's give him our attention for the last session for the talk. Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks for sticking around, even though this is definitely popping out like a sore thumb. I didn't necessarily engage in any community advancement projects with this particular study, but this is a hot topic. It's very important. I think everybody should have an understanding of what's going on with these processes. So my name is Jesse, and I want to talk to you about the transport of a neonicotinoid pesticide under field conditions. So what are the neonicotinoids? Well, in many ways, they are the ideal class of pesticide. They're very effective in small doses. They're very non-toxic to mammals, and they have a broad spectrum of effect. In other words, they can target a large number of organisms. So consequently, they're used on almost every major crop that you eat. And 60% of that dose that's basically being applied to these crops is now being coated on seeds. So basically, the problem arises when these pesticides come in contact with many non-target organisms, such as bees. Right, they're very effective in small doses, so it takes only 20 nanograms of thymethoxam to kill 50% of any given honeybee population. Also, they're very water-soluble, which presents a unique opportunity to growers or to seed manufacturers, where they can assume that if you coat the seeds of many crops, that the pesticide will migrate into the root zone and be taken up systemically into the plant. And this is effectively supposed to arm the plant against sucking and chewing pest insects throughout the growing season, as opposed to applying a more liberal foliar spray that could, you know, potentially be runoff or be moved down gradient. So at any given time, only a maximum of 20% of the dose of mass is actually being detected in these plants. So the idea is that the rest of it is in the environment. We want to figure out, are they moving from the seed coats, because no one has proved the direct connection between this dose going in the ground and surface water and groundwater bodies. So we chose the common neonicotinoid thymethoxam for our transport solute. So even in the one-dimensional profile, even in the one-dimensional profile, the plant that's actually here, the organism that's benefiting from the pesticide application, can complicate things, right? So when you apply water to the top of your soil, right, gravity's going to win, things are going to move downward in the profiles with the solute, right? But also, we're having evapotranspiration. That process is drawing water upwards. So even in the one-dimensional profile, things can get relatively complicated. So we want to tease out the effect of the plant in this particular project. And this is just showing that, like, the extreme example is that we get a stratification of concentration, or as you move up in the profile, there's these, like, distinct bands of concentration, you know, moving up as you go up, or increasing as you move up. So we've also found, on the other hand, that besides retarding the downward movement, in a column study, or a field-based study, we found that below the high-density root zone, we're actually detecting higher concentrations of these pesticides in columns containing viable plants. So plants, in addition to, you know, holding on to these pesticides, may be actually contributing to the downward movement of these pesticides, which is an interesting flavor of the mix. So we wanted to test a few hypotheses for this field project. We assume that thymethoxam will mobilize vertically and laterally within the soil environment. We assume that it will become transported from the system via runoff, shallow lateral drainage, and deep drainage below the root system. And we're assuming that we will see more of the pesticide from plots controlled for plant growth, as opposed to, in terms of runoff and shallow lateral drainage, as opposed to those with viable plants. And because of that process that I talked to you about earlier, the downward movement facilitated by the plants, we're assuming that if we look down below the root zone, we might see higher concentrations of the pesticide in plots containing viable plants. So our location was at the Virginia Tech Urban Horticulture Center in Montgomery County, Virginia. 10 years in pasture previously. This was basically conventionally tilled down to 30 centimeters in the spring and summer preceding the project. We were on a 5% slope, which is ideal for a transport study. And we had a gross close ultisol, a fine textured soil, and we had no detectable background concentrations of our pesticide. And I'm just noting here that as you go down, the texture really gets fine, so things are more highly reactive. We have about 75% clay a meter down in the sea horizon, so it's, yeah, you know. So basically, this is a drainage design in a nutshell. We have six plots at a 5% slope. We have three plots controlled for plant growth and three plots containing viable plants. And by controlled for plant growth, I mean we basically snipped the plants upon emergence and just wouldn't allow them to grow. So we had the dose in the field all coated on the pesticide, but no plants available, no corn plants. So we had three hydrologic compartments, runoff, shallow lateral drainage down to a depth of 72 centimeters. And then we collected the steep drainage at 110 centimeters, below where the roots should go in the profile, below the root zone. So we planted at about 60,000 plants per hectare. That's recommended for the New River Valley in Blacksburg. It's a relatively low planting density. And I'm just saying here that our project extended from June 6th planting day to October 4th harvest in 2016, which is about 124 days. So this is just a larger view of the drainage design. Basically, we're just getting an idea of these collection systems downgrade, and I had trenches tied together with, you know, with hoses collecting drainage and these barrels downgrade. And these are just lysimeters, suction lysimeters, collecting that drainage, that deep drainage at 110 centimeters. These are just the plot dimensions. They're 3 by 3.5 meters. So soil sampling. So what's going on in the soil profile? We wanted four snapshots in time. The ideal way to, the best time to look at, you know, a snapshot is at various corn stages. So we looked at 23 days, which was the V3 corn stage, 36 days, which was the V5, and 66 days at the VT corn stage, and then our harvest corn stage, which is R6 at 124 days, or the end of the experiment. So we had two horizons. The surface soil, which was the AP horizon at 0 to 5 centimeters. And then we had a BT horizon. We collected soil samples from 25 to 30 centimeters. And we aggregated these samples, basically three per plot into one sample and analyzed for the pesticide, right? And we had next to plant and between row samples. Why did we do that? Because if you look at the concentration next to the plant, you can get an idea of how things are moving vertically in the profile. And then between rows, we can basically prove lateral movement in the soil. And I'm just saying here that we really care about what's called the bulk soil, the soil that's outside of the immediate rhizosphere, because theoretically this is a much more mobile pool of the pesticide. And all samples were analyzed for thymethoxam via ultra-performance liquid chromatography coupled with two mass specs. So we're looking at the results of drainage, starting out with runoff. We're looking at concentration through time. And we can see that, so also I should note that we have rainfall on top as a reference, so what was going into the plot. So the plant was significant by early August in terms of this drainage compartment. We had an earlier breakthrough for plots containing viable plants. In other words, we reached a peak concentration earlier with plants as opposed to not having plants. And this should just be noted that we really run into problems with several neonicotinoids above 0.1 parts per billion. This is parts per billion on the y-axis. You can see that almost all these samples are exceeding this. So these levels are potentially of concern. Moving down to shallow subsurface lateral drainage, we're seeing the similar pattern with the plant becoming significant in this early August period. Around early August. And we're seeing an earlier breakthrough, as I mentioned, similarly to the runoff. And unfortunately, the hypothesis was incorrect regarding the deep drainage. We did not see a plant effect. So, we're gonna take a look at soil moisture, or what's going on below the soil. So in the y-axis for this bottom figure, this is the same figure I showed you for shallow subsurface lateral drainage, right? But now we have soil moisture. So the solid lines indicate plots containing plants, and the dashed lines are no plants. Blue is deep drainage at 110 centimeters, and basically we have a 30 centimeter line, a red line, for the BT horizon or near surface soil. So we can see that there's these characteristic, what they call diurnal signals, or daily fluctuations in soil moisture, which are really like a dead giveaway or an indicator of plant activity, right? But we can see that these pick up in the lower soil, or plants are potentially grabbing lower pools of water at the exact time that we're seeing a separation of treatment between a plant and no plant effect. So at this separation, the plants are reaching for deeper water, and later on, this signal amplifies, right? We have a more intense diurnal fluctuation, but larger rain events shown up here by the inverted y-axis at the top, they're not necessarily translating to higher concentrations moving through the profile. So it's interesting. It could be that the plants are helping mobilize this pesticide through time and later corn growth stages. So I wouldn't get too hung up on this figure. I just wanted to point out that this is basically runoff in red, and then blue, that's subsurface lateral flow, right? The solid circles, again, or solid circles are plants, empty circles, no plants. I just wanted to point out that if you look at the trends, basically the red is dominant, so runoff had the highest concentration, so it's the dominant mechanism for transport. And the solid lines are important here. If you pay attention, we basically reach an earlier breakthrough. So this is mass as a function of volume drain, so how much actually was in the compartment, how much pesticide was in the compartment, as opposed to how much actually drained. So we can see that after a certain point, the curve or the trend basically flattens out for these plant treatments, and they become less sensitive to fluctuations in moisture and drainage. So that was kind of building up on the earlier breakthrough, what I talked about earlier. There's a point where these plants have an effect where the pesticide becomes less sensitive to fluctuations in the soil moisture. So we're looking at the movement of the profile or the soil profile now. At the top here, we're looking at the AP horizon, that's the surface soil horizon, and then lower horizon, we're looking at the BT soil. So these are next to plant treatments, so we're looking at vertical movement, and we're tracking the pesticide from the V3 to the R6 harvest stage. And then on the left, we have no plant, on the right, we have plant. And I'm just pointing out that we basically have vertical movement confirmed by the V3 corn stage at 23 days. And we have a significant effect on the distribution vertically in the profile with the plant. And then on that same note, similarly, we're moving to lateral movement. So these are in between rows. We have a confirmation of lateral movement by the V5 corn stage. So implications and discussion. I just want to say this is the first time that neonicotinoids have been proved to mobilize to the environment from corn seed coats, or just from seed coats in general. They were detected in three hydrologic domains, and runoff was the dominant mechanism or had the highest concentrations. And the plant was significant in runoff and shallow lateral drainage, however, it was not necessarily significant in the deep drainage compartment. So with these data, we can say that potentially the risk of transport likely declines with time. So what matters is these inputs early in the season. Some scientists have basically found that the affinity for this pesticide, or these pesticides for like the soil, how tightly it's attracted to soil, increases with time. They've speculated that basically it's a diffusion process. These pesticides may be moving to more immobile pools. And that's kind of what I think we're seeing here, on top of, you know, it's rapidly decaying. However, I think that this is likely a factor. So I just want to note that this is a conservative study. We basically had 50% of the dose that the manufacturer would have actually put on the seed because it was degraded, you know, in storage. So the dose was relatively low. The planting density was also relatively low. Around Midwest, you basically can have twice that density or twice the dose per hectare. And I just want to note that the concentrations detected in soil here were up to 4 times that what we saw in our column study or our lab-based study. So the risk was there. Also, our drainage concentrations were low, but there's nothing that says it'll, you know, immediately, the concentrations aren't high enough to kill, you know, like to erode the ecosystem from the down, from the ground up. But they're still of concern. And I just want to thank everybody. Thanks for sticking around again. And thanks to all my collaborators on this project. Dr. Junju Wu, Dr. Ryan Stewart, Dr. Kong Zia, Dr. Coley Heshin, Dr. Lee Daniels, and some people in my lab. Thank you. I wasn't necessarily concerned. I was almost banking on it.
Well, you said that you were kind of surprised that you didn't see more of the neocontinoids in the deep drainage.
Yeah.
But the ability of water
to flow through that
5% clay layer is almost zero. So
yes.
That doesn't surprise me at all. You didn't see any in the deep.
Yeah, but we detected it. It was still detectable. And also interesting is that the concentrations, we can basically multiply those times two because we did an earlier study, like a preliminary like sorption study on the cups used on the light cementers. And so the concentrations were really comparable to what was found 70 centimeters above that.
Okay.
So they were there. And you know, structure, soil structure, I don't want to bore you guys about soil structure, but it's, you know, just because it's a sea horizon, it's typically, you know, that means there's no structure, but these are likely expansive clays. You saw there was a pretty big drawdown in the later period of the study. So the fluctuations in soil moisture could have allowed for, you know, openings to form. And if the plants theoretically did make it to that point, you know, you're basically accessing that pore network and you're dosing the sea horizon. So I don't think that it's far-fetched to find it at that depth. And I also have, so I was going to do a slide about, you know, evidence of preferential flow, showing all of these things where basically our primary metabolite, CLO, it's actually a neonicotinoid pesticide, but it's the first step down when the microbes start carbonating into pieces. We saw some big spikes early on in those deep drainage lysimeters. So I don't think it's super far-fetched that the pesticide can make it down to that point. So we found in the lab that it could be like, as like personally, we found in the lab that it could be as low as like 20 days of the half-life. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, people have seen it as high as like 400 days. So it can, that's been some of the, like the Nature papers, like, oh man.
Microbial
activity, and the whole degradation process is pretty nebulous at this point. We don't know. Like, we know that like CLO is in the pathway, but we're not necessarily seeing spikes of our primary metabolite later in the season, if that makes sense.
So to wrap it up with the theme of this session, how would you go about doing this messaging to the general public?
So that's a good question. So our lab study would probably be a better starting point for that than our field study, because this, as I said, this is very conservative. This is like, you know, limiting conditions. What we found in the lab study is that soil structure process is very important. So a lot of farmers now are working towards no-till systems, right? There's a lot of research saying that, you know, tilling systems like the one we just experimented on, you know, are potentially bad for soil health, blah, 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 blah. But when you have a no-till system and you let it slowly move to this more natural state, it starts developing more pore networks, more, you know, soil structure. So we kind of hypothesized in the lab-based study that this no-till transition may potentially allow for more mobilization of the pesticide.
Okay, so stop there. Why should I care?
Why should you care? Because like a third of all your crops are pollinated from bees. Bees are dropping like flies.
So that would be your hook. All right.
Yeah.